My name is Laurens Jacht, and welcome to Cybersecurity Talks, the interview podcast for cybersecurity professionals and for those who aspire to become one. Join us on our journey and learn about the latest trends, real-life war stories, and everything you need to know about this fascinating industry.
I'm very happy and excited to announce today's guest, Jackie Willems. Jackie is a Zero Trust architect and the founder of the company Watchman. I love the statement on their website, network security is dead, but we build the new. Jackie himself has been a network security architect for many years, and he built secure network environments for many government institutions, banks, telco companies, and the list goes on in the Netherlands and also in Belgium. In 2016, he decided to start his own company, now called Watchman. They are now with 20 full-time employees, and they're still rapidly growing and expanding. Their strong belief is that Zero Trust will be the future. While running Watchman, Jackie is also the network security architect for the Dutch National Police and is also active as a consultant for the Dutch Chamber of Commerce. What a great pleasure to have you on the show, Jackie.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here.
And I want to dive right into things. I saw Watchman's slogan is the Zero Trust Collective. Can you elaborate on that?
So the engineers who work at Watchman are all specialized in zero trust transformations. We have a lot of customers that are starting their cloud journey, and they all run into the same issues from, if our data is no longer on site on behind our perimeter, how do we secure that data? And that's exactly why the zero trust security architecture model was created, to basically answer that question. Like I said, with Watchman, all our customers are having these situations, and we are, like I myself, I'm, for example, lead zero trust officer at the Dutch Chamber of Commerce, where I help the customer solve the security issue when they are moving to the cloud. And like the answer in a simple wording would be implement zero trust. And it's a little bit a play on words that, as we are a collective of engineers, we name ourselves the Zero Trust Collective.
Yeah, beautiful. I like it. And as you already described, your background originally is more from the networking security side. Can you tell our listeners how you actually started your career within networking or within cybersecurity? And some of our guests have been like fooling around at the age of 12 or 13 already, seeing how they could get access to things they should not get access to. How do you range in that category?
I think it's a fairly typical story of an IT guy. When I was younger, I never played outside with other kids. Like, my parents thought I was a little bit strange that I always wanted to sit behind the computer. And I guess I started doing support tasks. I supported in the support desk. That was at the high tech campus for Philips, and the Advanced Technology Center. I remember that. And I found it very interesting that I was basically like a support engineer, and all those like PhD researchers types, they were all having like weird labs and queries, and I really loved like troubleshooting issues. You know, I really loved trying to like had the use case, the issue, what isn't working, and then like testing, troubleshooting, and then like to be able as what was my age? I don't know, around 18 or 19 or 20. And then that I was able to help like some important sounding researcher with a complicated project. That was like, yeah, I mean, that felt really good. And basically that was really the start. I've done that like a couple of years. That then I Yeah, I was given the opportunity to become more like a general network engineer, system engineer person at Obertur Technologies, it was called at the time. And nowadays it's called IDEMA. They make the ID cards and payment cards. And that was like a very, very interesting experience for me. Because so I was always like intrigued by security and I guess more hacking specifically. Yeah, that's, I mean, every IT guy is like having, like you've seen all, like you've seen the pop culture stuff that cool hackers material and hacker movies and stories. And that's always, I mean, I don't know, you associate a little bit with, I guess, superheroes and stuff. That's always, that's something in your mind. And I myself wasn't like a really active hacker in the sense that I try to hack government companies or stuff like that. But from a very young age, I was involved in actually like building the network security and the security and following all the guidelines and doing the audits to make sure that the customer didn't get hacked. That was always my, I guess that was, yeah, where I started really. And I mean, there is, I don't know, it's, I like the logics behind it. I like the logics and the, it's like a puzzle. It's like a puzzle. And I mean, I like puzzles. That's why I like games as well. So it's basically a puzzle. And if you're on the defensive side, you need to be creative on how you can make it as complex as possible for an attacker while not sacrificing usability for your users. That's, I guess, the broad overview of it.
And eventually in 2016, you decide, after being also a consultant for a long time, to start your own business.
Exactly.
What was your idea behind it? And did you see a gap in the market? Or when did you decide to take this leap of faith?
Yeah. It's, I don't know. It's, it's, I guess it's, I don't know, is it a crime of ambition? So I was like I'm a pretty competitive person, and like working in my field, like, I don't know, maybe it's arrogance. I always think, yeah, if I would have done it, I could have done it better myself. And so at the consultancy firm I was working for at the time, I saw a lot of like improvements that could have been done better. And I was like, yeah, okay, I can probably do it better myself. And sure, at first I was just a freelancer. I was thinking, okay, let's try it on my own and see how it goes. And actually, it was fairly enjoyable. It is, if you're a perfectionist like myself, it's always, I guess, a challenge to work with other people, because like other people have different opinions and different ways of doing stuff. And as if you like get to know me in this conversation, I'm like very specific. I like things a certain way. And then it's, I mean, I guess it's easier if you're on your own, right? Then you can decide the approach. Then you can decide how you want to solve something or how you want to engage something. And the same thing is if you're looking at like work, I guess, what kind of assignments you want to do. You're your own boss, right? And you can decide, wow, that's an interesting project at an interesting customer. I'm going to go for it. And like the excitement, I guess this goes for most of the people in the security world who go freelance, I think it's a little bit the same story. The sense of freedom, that's pretty amazing. It really delivers. It was probably one of the best decisions in my life. That was really great. A great start for me. As like I was doing that for 3 years, I really come and I really hit like I guess the the ceiling a little bit, what I can do as a freelancer. I already started as a lead network security architect. So in a technical sense, that was already like in my area of expertise, the highest role that you could have gotten. And yeah, when I was working for myself, I also went through the hassle of getting the most difficult certification in the networking and networking security space. That's the CCIE certification. After I achieved that, I was like, okay, I have the most difficult certification. I already have the probably one of the most interesting jobs that you could get. I was the network security architect of the largest bank in Europe. From a networking security perspective, it couldn't really get any much better. But then I really noticed what would be really interesting if you could compete on the level that companies as Netskope, Zscaler are competing, like the cutting edge network security or security services. That was like really like inspiring. As I hold like key technical positions at the customers, I engaged with a lot of vendors, a lot of security vendors, and I was really like intrigued by their servers and product and the product development behind that product and how the deal was made, how they solved the issue at the customer. And like, I was always like, wow, that's something you cannot do like by yourself, right? You need a team to like achieve that much impact. And that was basically, I guess, the desire to find like-minded people and start Watchmen.
So you started the Zero Trust Collective, and now it all clicks. Yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah, it was so finding like-minded people is quite hard, to be honest, even in a space as like niche as network security, because you can maybe have the same, I don't know, technical vision, but yeah, there needs to be a click on a personal level as well. And that really happened when I met Sander Magnen. He's our current CTO, and he also has probably the same background as me. He's been a consultant for many years, had many architect positions at big customers, and when we were talking about this, it really, like, there was really the synergy was like coming, and that was like, yeah, that was the start, that was when we did the rebranding from my former name that was of my company, that was Proficient IT, and we figured, okay, what is the roadmap, what is the goal that we have, and that's when we came up with the name Watchmen, yep. I figured, yeah, that really like fits with our vision and who we are as people, and Sander and myself, and it comes back in the logo and our whole idea that we want to spark the excitement of fellow engineers to like to come join us, right? And that's where we created our brand. Like we wanted to do something that is new, right? There are so many security companies, a lot of the stuff it's pretty old, right? It's been around for years, and we really wanted to focus on the new, and that's what you see in our branding, and that's why we emphasize Zero Trust that heavily, because in the network security space, that's really a big change. It's probably the biggest change in the last 30 years, and we fully want to, I don't know, grasp that current trend. We want to build our brand around it and associate ourselves with that movement, I guess.
Yeah, but that's also nice when you have a mission or a vision as a company to make it bigger than just your own company. So the impact that you will have. So you want to be the the frontiers of this new movement. You want to start a movement, and that's just bigger than the work you do yourself, but probably also inspire others to join the movement, and whether they're in or outside of your company, that doesn't matter, but you want to be on the front edge of that. So I think that's really nice.
Exactly. That was a perfect summarization. Are you still looking for a job, by the way? Because that was excellent.
Thank you. You did a good pitch yourself there as well. So I was also listening as well. Yeah, that's pretty good. But I feel the passion. So that's actually very nice. Yeah. And I think when you came together with Sander, things also started happening quick. Yeah? After the rebranding, you guys are now at 20 FTE, which is within a year and a half or something. That's really something incredible to grow this quick.
It helps, of course, that we are both, I guess, like experienced consultants. We have a broad network, and we know a lot of people. And I really like it how it turns out that Sander and myself, I guess we are quite well known in our specific niche. And that a lot of people really believe in the story, and the vision we have, and want to join us, and then like bring their own ideas, and then we create that much more synergy. And I mean, I guess that's the reason, I guess, to our success, if you would call it like that. And that it's really the people that is like behind the ideas, right? That it's really the people that brought us to the level where we are today.
Yeah. And your initial plan, and that was also your motivation and drive, is to compete perhaps with the vendors, like that would bring you that next level of
that's of course, I mean, that's the dream, huh? That's the dream. We must be real, of course. We are not in Silicon Valley or in Israel here, huh? There is no hopes of VC money, huh? Here you cannot build like a minimal viable product with no revenue, eh? That's something you can only do there. Eh? And so we believe in a different model, that if we want to achieve something like that, we need to bootstrap it ourselves. And in order to do that, yeah, you will need to have like a healthy cash flow, right? And we're doing that with consultancy. So we are a consultancy company, and we hope that we could use the like the knowledge and the network we built with our consultancy to our advantage when we go into services. So Watchman currently is only a knowledge provider. We don't sell any licenses or any products. This makes us, how do you say it, vendor independent, and that we help the customers build the best solutions, and that's a nice thing to have. Like I would like to keep it that way as long as possible, before we need to go into restrictive partnerships, or before we can like develop our own solution or service. So it's still in a, how do you say it, in a more in a vision phase. It's more like getting the right people together, and then I guess the right idea will come later.
Well, what's the moonshot with Watchmen? If you can draw the ideal picture in say 3 or 5 years, did you change the world by then already?
I mean, it would be quite interesting if some VC like contacted us and they said, yeah, okay, here you have like let a substantial investment where we could just like hire complete development teams, and then we can like build the ideal solution for a problem that our customers are having, and that we could effectively market that solution, and yeah, could help a lot of customers with that. That would be, of course, the ideal scenario.
But what if Jackie would now be living in Silicon Valley already? Would Watchman be a different type of company?
Probably. But I mean, it's hard for me to, based on my, I don't live there, right? So I don't really know for sure, but I'm quite sure that growing up in Silicon Valley would be like, if you're into IT, it's like completely different than growing up in the Netherlands, right? And it's a completely different market, and like every engineer or developer in Silicon Valley, they are also like part owner of some startup company. It's like common there, right? Like in investment rounds and VCs, it's a whole different world, right? Product development is it's like everyone have done product development probably in Silicon Valley, and in the Netherlands you don't really see that, right? There is always like it's always a service that needs to be supported, or it's completely different.
Yeah, it's more conservative, I think. We don't like to dream that big.
Yeah, also that, but even then, it's like starting your own company in the Netherlands and trying to do product development, it's like really hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard. I mean, where do you get your funding from? That's already the first question. That's a major point. And then, okay, so who are you, how are you going to pay your marketing and salespeople then? So that is like a big challenge. I mean, that's the reason why most of the tech companies come from outside Europe. We don't have the financial infrastructure for it.
Especially in Europe, I think we have a deficit if you compare to the US market and Israel. And if European companies do well, they get acquired by Israeli or American companies. So we lose the good companies again to the other folks in the world.
I mean, that's where everyone is at, huh? Like all the resource pool of people. I mean, it would be the same for Watchmen, by the way. If we were to grow big, we need to open up an office in Silicon Valley, of course, because I mean that's where it's at. Or like in Israel, that's where everything is happening. You need to be there, right? If you want to compete with those players, I mean you cannot. I mean you need to be there as well.
Yeah,
but I mean this is really a question of dreaming big. Like I said, if we look at the Dutch market, and if we look at what we want to achieve, as in the current situation, just becoming a very good network security consultancy firm, that's already like a major achievement. Most of the players are already bought up by big companies as well. I would prefer if we can stay as independent as long as possible, so that I know that we can keep our core values and that we can like keep the energy that we're currently having.
Yeah, no, beautiful. Well put. And whilst running Watchmen, you also do what you probably love most as well, is to really be an architect on some of the highest levels possible. You also do this for the Dutch National Police. You're the network security architect. Can you explain a bit more about how you got that role to begin with? Because I think that's not easy. And also, secondly, what is it like? And I know you cannot share too much confidential stuff, but I'm very curious to know more about this.
I was already the lead network security architect at the largest bank in Europe for 3 years, and that was in Brussels. And I wanted to go back to the Netherlands So I basically just applied for that position. And yeah, the police were happy to have me. So that was really a natural thing to move from a bank to the police. And sure, that's a government company. So there is always a difference, of course, working for a multinational, a bank or a government company, especially in like politics and pacing. But if we're talking about technology and principles, security principles, yeah, they're very similar. They're very similar. I also hold a second position then at lead zero trust officer at the Dutch Chamber of Commerce. So I'm quite of a workaholic, you could say that.
Yeah, I figured. I see the drive, but I think it probably doesn't feel so much as work to you as it might feel for other people. You truly enjoy what you're doing, and it probably goes back to that you said in the beginning, I like to solve problems and I like to do complex puzzles. I think with these two positions you mentioned, and you're always puzzling and solving issues. And what are some of the main challenges that you have seen with the Dutch police or of the Dutch Chamber of Commerce? I'm very curious because the stakes are high.
Yeah, the main use cases what we see is basically where we built the concept of Watchmen around. And so we didn't like invent those use cases, right? We saw those use cases in the field at our customers, at the Dutch police, at the Chamber of Commerce. That was those were the issues that they were having. And we really created our branding and our, the stuff that we do around that. And so if I were to just answer your question, it would be cloud transformation. Those companies are, they are government companies, and then there is more politics involved. The never-ending debate if you can keep data in the cloud or does it need to be on-prem. And it's very politically charged. But what you see with a lot of Dutch government companies, that's that they are actually starting to move to the cloud for many of their services now. And with that, they come into the same challenge that they need to revise their security model. So yeah, they need help in revising, okay, how can we protect this data if it's no longer in our data center? And that is, yeah, that's basically what I do in those roles. I try to figure out how to create the architecture to guide the processes, to do a little bit of, how do you say it? Is it mentorship? Is it education on how you should protect your environment if you're going to the cloud?
Yeah, but it's interesting because you probably would have so many clients still knocking at the door if you look at government institutions. There's so much demand that this transformation is really ongoing. So what you mentioned earlier, that this is probably the right timing to start such a movement, because it's soon gonna be everywhere.
I mean, I hope so, right? This is really the whole idea behind our company.
I think the timing is good. Yeah.
But yeah, as I see how the market is reacting and the demand from the customers and the use cases, if you ask me as a personal opinion, to me it's clear. No one will buy a firewall anymore in 5 years. That whole model will go away. Between the lines in our punchline. That network security is it's no longer like physical stuff in your data center. It will migrate to as a service solutions. And yeah, you need a different approach to design, to build, to implement stuff like that. And that is where we are helping our customers with.
Yeah. Now, very, very interesting. And I want to go a bit deeper on the police, because it seems like a very interesting environment. What is one day you will never forget working for the Dutch police?
Okay, well, as the network from the police is like probably one of the most critical infrastructures in the Netherlands. It's always, I guess, a little bit nerve-wracking and on one side and another, like you really feel like that you have a burden on your shoulders, right? If you need to implement like a big change in that environment, or that you design the solution and then the change is being scheduled. And because there have been cases, if you follow the news, that that like the emergency services are no longer available. Those are all being impacted by the infrastructure that we manage at the police. So it's very critical that if you like implement big changes that could impact those services, that you don't make any mistakes. And so you need to be like flawless. And even then, I mean, nothing in life is flawless, I guess, but that can be really like nerve-wracking experiences, right? If you're together with a team and you're implementing in a change, or something is like, or you're troubleshooting something like that, maybe that's a good, because I don't want to go into specific too much, but like the excitement of troubleshooting, what I explained in the start of our podcast, was that like working on something and like that you have the feeling that you can really like make the difference and trying to solve an issue that would like minimize downtime or like would mitigate a very important risk. That's exciting, right? That's to do stuff like that. It's really exciting. And as an engineer, it really gives you a sense of importance, right? What you are doing is like important. And it's a little bit like a poker game. If you like play poker for like low stakes poker with friends, then it's you don't have the same pressure. If you're playing like real high stakes, then it's like then it really gets your heart rate going. And I mean, it's the same in working like an environment like the police. Then it's like the stakes are that high that's I don't know. It gives you a different kind of how do you say it, adrenaline or rush that you will not get with a small environment. I think that is the most I can say without disclosing confidential information. Or
no, but I feel it. But what you're saying, I really can feel the excitement. Yeah. And you mentioned earlier that you're a perfectionist, and with these type of environments, we as Dutch citizens also want to have a perfectionist being the network security architect in these type of environments, because things need to be flawless indeed. So I think you're
that's an opinion, right? But I agree with that opinion.
Yeah, I think that we both agree. For some, it might feel like a burden, like playing these high stakes poker games. But for you, it seems to be something you seek. Perhaps it's similar to Lionel Messi, who wants to take these last penalties in the finals. I think you're in that sense a similar thrill seeker, that it brings you joy, while others might stress out.
How do you cope with stress?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And I take it as a compliment that you like associate me in that way. But yeah, if you ask me, I agree. Like I like doing stuff that is impactful. Like I like to do something that really matters, right? And if it's challenging, sure. I mean, that's probably because it's more impactful and it's more difficult. And that's I really like that. And indeed, if you say, okay, how do you manage stress levels? I guess it's a personal thing, but I like self-discipline. You know, try to have your rhythm, try to have like your eating habits in order, like the way you have set up your environment. I don't know, for example, I could show you my keyboard, but the people who are like listening would not see it. So like I like to build my own keyboards, right? So I design the PCBs, and like I loop the switches so that when I'm like working on a CLI, which I'm not doing that often anymore, that you can have like the optimal performance, right? That's why I like your comparison, because yeah, to be honest, I agree. I like to do everything that is optimal, and to be honest, knowing that I have done everything that is optimal, it gives calm. So if I know, okay, I've done the optimal stuff, I have done everything optimal, and I'm doing a high impactful change or project or whatever, that's actually just calming for me. What is giving me stress? If I'm being inefficient, if I'm like spending too much time on something that doesn't matter, that's stressful for me. But yeah, knowing that there is something that is very important and I've done everything in my power to guarantee the best outcome, to be honest, that's not stressful at all.
Yeah, I love how you turn it around. I'm curious, because now we're getting to know each other a bit better, but as a high performer, I wonder how do you deal with failure? If you would make an error somewhere, and that's not who you are, or that's what you always try to fight. How do you deal with those situations?
I mean, failure is part of life, eh? And I mean, just don't think too much of it. But yeah, I mean, that all depends on who you ask. And luckily, and like if we're talking about engineering, IT engineering, I mean, I cannot even remember like last time there was like a big failure or anything. This is, but yeah, then that's why I've been doing this for 20 years already, and I've been really like you build your success on failures. That's always how everything works. And but yeah, to be honest, in engineering, I cannot even remember. But if we're talking about entrepreneurship, that's something where I'm, I guess, a noob, a junior in. That's, I mean, made loads of failures there. Try to use the wrong approach, and it's a learning experience. And the best thing you can do with a failure is learn from it, right? And you need to fail a lot, else you will never succeed. So it's the same as in business. Yeah, we'll probably make loads of mistakes, but trying to learn from them, trying to really realize what you have done, and always try to think back, could I have changed this outcome? And I mean, I'm starting to sound like a little bit like a motivational speaker, I guess. But
I love it.
I mean, it's true. It's true, right? This is for everything in life.
Yeah, you said you built your success on your failures. I think that's very powerful. But what you do, and this is the final time I will compare you with like a Messi or something, but it's also people forget how many failures they've had. They've also missed a lot of crucial penalties, and they lost a lot of finals. And I think if you manage to go out on the field again, and I think, okay, I've been in this situation before, and last time I did this, and then it didn't work out. You know what to do this time. So if you can learn, and also during the failures, you learn, okay, I need to go through this, because this is where growth happens. If also in entrepreneurship, I think if everything's one big success, you won't learn as much. And when I started becoming an entrepreneur, in the beginnings, when something didn't go well, I was really upset and frustrated with myself, and I started working really hard but not smart. So it really had a big impact, and then I started stressing. But now when I go to sort of darker periods, I know, okay, I have to go through this, because I'm learning at times like this. So better enjoy this part of the ride as well, because this is actually where I grow, and not when things are going smooth sailing. Like, good captains can navigate through heavy storms, and I think that's very important.
It's starting to sound like a lot of, like I said, like a motivational speech here, but this is, in my opinion, it's true. I actually have an example. So I was telling you about that certification, the CCIE certification. It's one of the most difficult in the networking field. And indeed, for me, it was also very difficult. I passed the fourth attempt. And like, when I did it the first time, I was like, yeah, no one passes the first time and it's impossible. So you have like low expectations and you fail and it's nothing is wrong. Then the second time, you have some more pressure on you, and you think, okay, yeah, I mean, I'm a good engineer, right? I should pass the second time. And then you fail. And then it's like, okay, that's a bit rough. And then you're like, okay. But now the third time, yeah, I'm going to pass. And then you like, I think that you've prepared well. And then the third time you fail miserably as well. At that moment, if I look back, I was really like in that dark space that you were like referencing. I was like, yeah, I'm never going to pass. I'm never going to, it's not for me, this exam. I'm not going to make it. And it really like took some time to like convince yourself from what have you been doing, right? I mean, what is your system? Are you really going to give up now? Is that like you spend so much like time, hours, weeks, month, and resources in like working on a goal? And are you just really going to give it up because you think you're not good enough? Right? Really, that is the thing that you then like, but I said to myself, and then I was like, yeah, if I need to go 10 times, I'll go 10 times. You don't need to quit. That's the only way how you really lose, right? If you quit. So yeah, then that was like, I was really like in a deep spot. But once I said, yeah, I'm just going to keep on trying forever. And then the first time I passed.
Yeah,
it's like it's a mental thing, right?
It's a good anecdote. Yeah, I like it. Now, very, very interesting conversation, and it became a bit motivational. But I think that's also okay. That's trying to understand the philosophy and also, yeah, the vision of Watchmen, and I think that's. That's interesting for you to share with us. So thank you for that.
I mean, I hope I like inspire other people to like achieve similar goals I mean, this is something like at first when I started to listen to like motivational stuff or read like motivational books, it's always, you're a little bit cynical, always a little bit cynical, but there is really a, how do you say it? I'm after to the madness. I don't know what the exact term is, but if you really start believing that, there is no downside in doing that, right? Really believing in yourself and like the mindset of never giving up, there is no downside in doing that. I mean, everyone should just do that. It's always better.
Yeah, it's true. That also brings probably a relief that you just gonna, what you mentioned with this certification, that you know I'm just gonna push. But in a way, I think giving up sometimes can also be good if you feel things don't work, like you only have one life and limited time available. So if you keep pulling on something that doesn't work, it's also sort of the opportunity cost. So you can only allocate a certain time on certain things. So that's where I also try to find a balance.
Yeah, it's true. That's indeed, that's finding the balance, right? And sure, that's probably a big challenge for me as I'm also a father, right? And that is something indeed, you need to find the right balance with all things in life. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the secret to life. Yeah. And besides sort of this... Yeah, the more mental aspect of business and network security, cyber security. Do you have other types of advice for young professionals that are keen to enter the field?
If you're talking about like from a technical perspective, I mean, you should really like do what you like, play with the products that you like, play with the solutions that you find interesting, go in the direction that you want to go, if it is like red teaming or blue teaming or network security or whatever the industry is, right? The main thing is that you do something that you are like connected to and are really interested in. Like if you don't have like a deeper connection to what you're doing, you will never we will never be able to shelve out that like 110% commitment. So I think that's probably the most important thing. Do what you love.
And but with Watchmen, the Zero Trust Collective, you want people that are probably just as passionate about network security and zero trust as you are. But probably during a job interview, everybody says, yeah, that this is really a big passion of mine. But how do you filter through that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, the question is, can you really filter through that? If someone can be really be convincing in an interview. And yeah, I mean, it's... I don't want to say that I can see through all people. It's hard. You never really know, right? But yeah, if someone is passionate about what they're doing and their story makes sense, that's really a good starting point, right? Time will tell, really, if people are actually up to the task. Yeah? That's something you will only know with time. And yeah, if the use case you named is specifically like junior people or people with no experience, then it's the story that they tell, right? Then it's the, I guess, the emotion that you think you read that they feel with something. Yeah? And like I'm a little bit of a factual person, I guess, that reading emotions is something that I don't know. I mean, I believe that an emotion can always be created and stuff. So you don't really know for sure, right? And especially like I said, people who don't have a track record, you cannot ask for a reference or something from another customer where you have implemented like a high level security project or anything. Yeah, it's a trust thing, and for yeah, it's. I mean, it's strange. Now I'm listening
in
to
zero
myself.
Trust.
But yeah, indeed, that's a correct point there. By the way, because you basically trust the people, right? It's the opposite of zero trust, because you trust the people you're interviewing, or like the person you're talking to. It's trust, right? It's not an application. It's not a machine. It's not a. You cannot implement zero trust with people. Sadly, if you ask me, but that's how it is. That's how it is. So you need to trust. And the ironic thing is, we have quite a lot of young people working at us. Like the average age of the company is quite low, I think. It's probably about my own age. I'm 36, by the way. And so I guess, yeah, I trust young people a lot because we have quite a lot of them. But that's mainly because I don't think it's really related to trusting young people. I am of the opinion that a lot of the experience is overrated. Because you can be very experienced, but if you don't have that, like, that fire, you know, that hunger in you, that motivation, yeah, then the experience is, yeah, it will not make you like build amazing products. Sure, you can maybe keep them running. You can keep them running, but I don't think you can create them. But then again, like we are talking, I mean, you're asking me, I guess, quite personal questions on how I look at life and at people, and I would like to say at Watchmen we try to tailor made a role for an engineer. So sure, there were many of our people are highly motivated and like I don't know big achievers and stuff like that, but even people who are like really good at their job. If their job is network security, and they have like values that the most important thing is family life and trying to be the best family person or partner that they can be. We also like make the role fit that, because we believe if you are like happy in life, you will be happy in Watchmen as well. So that's I cannot cast the same expectations that I cast on myself on the people working at Watchmen. That's just something I want to make clear. Else it sounds like that we are only over ambitious types, perfectionists, and that's not the case. We have a very diverse mix of people.
Yeah, but people lean towards success and ambition. That's very sexy. So you want to work for a successful and ambitious company or group of people. So by even saying zero trust collective, it feels like there's a movement, there are things happening. It's almost like a demonstration of a...
That's what we wanted to express, right? That's what we wanted to express.
Yeah. So it's more than just a company, and that's the feeling I get. So that's nice, yeah. Our final question always, Jackie, is... if you can send one signal message to all the CISOs across the world, what would this message be?
Make sure that you fully implement zero trust architecture in the coming year.
Nice. Thank you. I want to thank you for this really nice and warm conversation. I think we touched upon a lot of things, from diets to zero trust to motivation, dealing with fears, dealing with stress, and getting up again when the chips are down. So I think it it covered a lot of interesting topics from business, but also on the personal side. So I really enjoyed this this conversation. I hope you feel the same way.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, really, thanks for having me. I mean, you're a very good interviewer. I really felt confident in telling my story here. So thank you for that.
Yeah, no, but I'm curious to catch up. Thanks for those words. But it would be nice to have a follow-up conversation in 2 or 3 years, because I'm really curious where you and Watchmen will be at by then.
Yeah, I mean, let's do that.
I expect great things.
Yeah, let's see.
Let's see. Okay, thanks so much, Jackie. And we'll be in touch.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks for listening to Cybersecurity Talks. If you've enjoyed this episode, don't forget to review and subscribe. For all further information on our live events and new podcast releases, go to csrecruitment.nl. Thank you and stay safe.